for those of you wondering where the broadcast is, it should be hitting you just any minute now. There are some things that no amount of fixing can take care of. And that is the fact that sometimes Bob forgets a button. Someday there will be a staff. I had some interesting emails over the weekend. There were a couple of crackly phone calls in the last week or so. And I just want to address that real quick. Because what you hear when you hear phone call difficulties is the result of the proliferation of 9 million different phone systems, interspersed with the rise of internet telephony. All phones do not sound alike. Some sound better than others. It would take a whole bunch of explaining and engineering and scientific know-how I don't have, but the bottom line is that in a lot of instances the headset microphone earpiece combinations that they sell at Radio Shack and Kmart and so forth for about $9.95 are really not very good for actual telephony. Because they're without doing a bunch of teching back and forth, they're hard to make sound good. So that's what that was. But you know what? I'm open to it simply because it expands the horizons and takes the horn yet another step ahead of everybody else, as we examine these potentials for communication amongst us. Right? Health update. Doodle is getting better. She's still not a very happy camper, but she is getting better. Over the weekend, I think I mentioned in an email that with the concerted effort of certain better living through chemistry pharmaceuticals, Doodle was singing Bohemian Rhapsody. And our good friend Maura, who has been a staunch supporter of the program almost from its very inception, sent along a Muppets video of Bohemian Rhapsody. And if you want to see a smile, if you ever want to see a great big just glass cracking smile, you should show it to that video to a 13-year-old diehard inveterate Glee fan, while said diehard inveterate Glee fan is enjoying prescription driven better living through chemistry. I wish if I'd had any sense, I would have had the cell phone video rolling, just to capture it, because it was precious, absolutely precious. So that's been our little world around here, mainly just staying warm and trying to stay off the roads and sort of looking at the roof every so often, going hold. But you know what? My roof is ahead. Where's the wood? That's solid wood. My wood is ahead of, not like that, you pervs. My roof is ahead of the Metrodome's by a long shot. That was some stunning video, wasn't it? Apparently, as I noted on the Bart Cop earlier today, apparently even, the Metrodome, the Hubert Humphrey Metrodome, apparently even being named after a Democrat is enough to make one cave in, as the Metrodome did. God, I love Bart Cop. By the way, T-shirt with the picture of Bush that says, "I screwed it all up, but thanks for blaming the black guy," arrived. And I have to give a plug to Bart for that, because it is going to be an absolute joy to wear that thing, perhaps during a broadcast. We're going back to D.C. in late January for another one of those Radio Row type affairs. And I have a feeling that T-shirt's going to be a huge hit. You know, mainly because it's true. They're still the Bush tax cuts, aren't they? Well, as a matter of fact, yes, they are. And now they're going to be the Bush tax cuts, it looks, based on information coming out of D.C. They're going to be the Bush tax cuts still through 2012, at which time we have been assured that President Not Sure will campaign vigorously against their extension, after which they will become the Bush tax cuts, probably for in perpetuity. And we do that, of course, because there are some several millions of people on unemployment unemployment insurance, unemployment compensation, that we would like to have continue eating until it runs out in 13 months, which will be 11 months before the next re-up on the Bush tax cuts. Not inspiring. I don't know if you saw Senator Carl Levin's remarks, but Senator Levin said, well, never mind what, no, let's not read, let's do the audio.
One of the questions will be as to whether we will stay long enough to get some of these things done, and I hope we stay as long as we need. We don't have many days extra if we come in after Christmas, but it adds a few days. It would add a few days, for instance, if we stayed in the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday before Christmas. You can pick up a few days, and if it will make a difference, and I think it can, but that's a majority leader and a leadership decision, I would hope we would take those few extra days. And also to get Don't Ask, Don't Tell passed. And the way that I think the president needs to fight them is to say that he is going to use all of the power he has of a bully pulpit and urge the Senate to stay in right up to New Year's. And if the Republicans at the end of December want to continue to filibuster a tax bill which is aimed at helping middle-income people instead of upper-income people, that is something which they will have to take on their own heads. That's the problem, is that I don't see that kind of a willingness to fight that hard where he will take that kind of a position. And that's what's necessary. The Senate and the House, these are tests of wills. We need all the help we can get from the president. Is the help there? Yes. Does it come to the extent that I would like to see it, in the way I would like to see it? No, it has not come in that form, which I think is essential to come down in the right way, in what I believe to be the best way in terms, for instance, of the tax bill.
You know, and I don't mean to get myself in trouble here, but I am who I am, and I was raised how and where and when I was. But there are two classic tales that come out of the old slave South that apply to this situation. And we'll get to more on Monday in a minute. But there are two tales. One, and they were both chronicled by Joel Chandler Harris, a pioneering fighter in the battle against racism and against the horrors of the post-Reconstruction South. There are two tales that he collected in his Uncle Remus stories. Those stories are frequently vilified by the same folks who vilify Mark Twain for Huckleberry Finn, never understanding that the things were written in such a way as to make an incredibly prickly public actually take their bitter draft and swallow it whole. And that's what this is about. It is about making the Republican Party wear and take ownership of that which they profess to believe. In one story, Brer Rabbit is walking down the road one day when he sees a person sitting by, or an animal by the side of the road, dressed in clothing. You know, those were all animals who wore clothing, you might recall. It had been placed there by Brer Fox. It was, in fact, made out of tar. That is not a racial reference. It is a reference to the fact that tar is sticky and hard to deal with. But the baby had been made of tar and clothed, and Brer Rabbit, who was ultimately amoral, goes walking by and speaks to it, and it don't speak back. And he keeps trying to speak to it, and it won't speak back. And after a while, Brer Rabbit convinces himself that that feller sitting over there is being rude to him, and commences to wail away on it. And the minute he does, he finds he's stuck to it, which makes him angrier, which makes him fight harder, which makes it stick to him even more. Well, that's what should be done. Because if you were listening to Carl Levin there, in that interview segment, on C-SPAN's Newsmakers, this past Sunday, you heard him talk about the fact, well, what's the quote? These are tests of will. And if the Repiglican Party is that dedicated to getting $801 billion worth of deficit-busting tax cuts for the rich for the next 2 years, then they should take ownership of it. And we should let it stick to them. And let them be Brer Rabbit fighting the tar baby. Let them own it. Let them wear it. Let them get it all over them. Because we forget that a resolution went through the House that would have extended tax cuts for everybody making below $250,000 worth, but that wasn't good enough for President Not Sure. The Democratic leadership was not admitted to his negotiations. He negotiated with the chinless Mitch and Ball and Boner. By the way, that's a new name you can use for the incoming Speaker of the House. Ball and Boner. Let me spell some redneck for you. That's B-A-W-L-I-N apostrophe. Boner. B-O-N-E-R. Ball and Boner. Cries at a clear blue sky. He proved it. Oh, he cried, Lord, he cried. His wife had to explain to Leslie Stahl that, well, it's a very emotional time for John. I don't know what, is Boner going through manopause or something? See, that's not sex. Man, M-A-N. See, got it. Yeah, right. But let him own it. Let him own it. And concurrently, but not conjointly, try to drive through legislation about unemployment compensation in these last waning days of what will go down in history as one of the most dysfunctional and quite possibly ADHD the Congresses in the history of what used to be the Republic. Because right now, as opposed to letting the Repiglicans have a nice brawl with a tar baby in the middle of the road, and I don't care what anybody says, that's not racist. It is not. I thought long and hard about this analogy, but it worked so damned well. And I examined my sources, and I went back and read some history and criticism of Joel Chandler Harris. And I came to the conclusion that no, it takes a lot of projection to turn the tar baby story into racism incarnate. But what we have operating here, and this is the point that I want to make, what we have operating here is one of two Joel Chandler Harris stories. I prefer to let the Rapig Lickens be Brer Rabbit wrestling with the tar baby, because Brer Rabbit loses. But what we've been handed and what's coming out of Washington now is apparently the idea that we are instead going to have the White House and the House and the Senate, those allied with the president, they are going to play the role of Brer Fox, while the Rapig Lickens, again, playing the role of Brer Rabbit, holler, "Oh, please don't throw me in that there deficit patch. Oh, kill me, skin me, do anything you want to me, but don't throw me in that deficit patch. Oh!" And you know how the story ends. Brer Fox gets to thinking, "My goodness gracious, I'm so much smarter than Brer Fox. I'm sorry, I'm so much smarter than Brer Rabbit. If he doesn't want to go in the deficit patch, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to throw him in there, because I'm so much smarter than he is." Isn't this the very essence of what's going on? The Rapig Lickens Party has hooted and hollered and carried on about deficit since the day that one went into the White House. Never mind the fact that for the 8 years previous, they hewed close and clung tightly to a vice president who said, "Deficits don't matter anymore." And say with reverential grace the name of Ronnie Reagan, St. Ronnie of Reagan, who didn't give a tinker's damn about deficits as long as he was running them up for the right folks. And really, that's the question, isn't it? Deficits are okay as long as we're running them up for the right folks. Yeah? Yeah, that's what I thought. There was a story. Caroli over at Crooks and Liars referred to it in a post of hers. A story coming from CNN's political ticker. Headline, "Anger at tax cut proposal makes strange bedfellows." Oh, don't it? The text says, "They make for strange political bedfellows. Some on the right are joining their usual adversaries on the left in their anger at the proposed tax cut deal. Many conservative activists are particularly upset that the measure would add almost $900 billion to the deficit, although they all support the extension of the Bush-era tax cuts, arguing those would spur economic growth. Many conservatives, including Representative Michelle Bachmann, batshit crazy of Minnesota, are also concerned because the measure would increase some taxes, pointing to the resumption of the estate tax, as well as extending the unemployment compensation for the long-term unemployed without any offsetting spending cuts." Ho! Ho, Bro Fox! Don't throw me in that old deficit patch! I'm going to throw him in that there deficit patch, and boy will he be sorry. Yet pardon my skepticism if I think that all the deficit hooting is just a little too plaintive for my ears. So So we have a choice. Congress can stay in session and do its job and have some go down in history as heroic, well, like unto the political equivalents of the people who withstood siege on Bataan. We can do that. And we can force a debate in what time still remains to this pitiful waste of a Congress. And we can show that we are prepared to go forward and really do good in the name of the unemployed and the people who aren't 99ers. Maybe even put forward some legislation about the 99ers. And make the Repiglicans take to the floor and scream about deficits. See, you and I realize that they have painted themselves into a deficit corner. And if the issues are raised separately and debated separately, as they should be, then to say, no, not going to let that, got to have all the tax cuts. Wouldn't be fair otherwise. But what about the deficit? Don't care. Got to have all the tax cuts. And then turn around and show them debating unemployment compensation while hollering, "Oh, goddamn, it ain't paid for. It'll bust the deficit." Well, those 13 months are equal to approximately $51 billion worth of deficit. $56 billion worth of deficit. The tax cuts for the rich are $801 billion. Make them own it. Let them wear it. That is the tar baby strategy. Because remember, as Democrats, presumably, we are Brer Fox. Brer Fox loses on the briar patch, the deficit patch scenario, whereas Brer Fox takes the day and gets to laugh his ass off in the tar baby scenario. At least that's the way I see it, and I am certainly subject to being corrected if I've somehow gotten it wrong. But I don't think I have. No, not in the least. I don't think I have. Now, all of that having been said, nothing smells better in the long run. Nothing smells better than that hot grease smell you get in the carnival, you know, and the sweetness of the cotton candy machine, right, and the frying batter around the weenies that come out of corn dog, or at least used to before they could be frozen and shipped halfway around the planet. Yeah. So get your cotton candy. Try not to ruin all that. Do not get the candy apple if you've got braces, children. Get your corn dogs out, because it is Moran Monday on the Horn. Hurry, 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 step right up. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is that there program. Step right up. Behind this thin cybernetic veil, you will step in and you will find Morans beyond your comprehension, more than thought can bear. No one will be admitted after the first 5 minutes. Morans beyond belief. Ladies and gentlemen, I kid you not. Head for the hills, or you will be up to your armpits in Morans. Moran number one, you know, I mentioned him just a few moments ago. That's right, Ball and Boner. Probably the most telling portion of the interview with Leslie Stahl, who was actually wearing less eye makeup than John Boehner, I might add, Ball and Boehner. He must be using some, like, serious industrial strength, no run, no streak, no error, sort of shellacked on waterproof mascara. He was wearing more eye makeup than Johnny Depp. Jesus. If he wore that if he wore that walking down Bourbon Street, somebody tried to get a lap dance from him. He sat down for a puff piece with Leslie Stahl on 60 Minutes. And the most telling part of it, apart from his feigned outrage over Barack Obama meekly calling him a hostage taker, which he is. There are millions of them, you know. It came with the discussion of the word compromise. Yes, indeed, let's shut down the Calliope. A little nod of the head to Anderson Cooper. Let's shut down the Calliope and go over to the audio of Leslie and Ball and Boehner engaging in conversation for the ages.
The question now is whether he can work things out with the president.
Nobody ever likes
at his news conference on Tuesday, Mr. Obama threw out a challenge.
Once John Boehner is sworn in as a speaker, then he's going to have responsibilities to govern. You can't just stand on the sidelines and be a bomb thrower.
We have to govern. That's what we were elected to do.
But governing means compromising.
It means working together.
It also means compromising.
It means finding common ground.
Okay, is that compromising?
I am not going to compromise on my principles, nor am I going to compromise the will of the American people.
You're saying I want common ground, but I'm not going to compromise. I don't understand that. I really
don't. When you say the word compromise, a lot of Americans look up and go, oh, well, they're going to sell me out. And so finding common ground, I think, makes more sense.
I reminded him that his goal had been to get all the Bush tax cuts made permanent.
So you did compromise.
We found common ground.
Why won't you say? You're afraid of the word.
I reject the word.
One reason is because half of his new members are Tea Partiers who think compromise is a dirty word, even when it comes to raising the national debt limit, which Mr. Boehner has said the new Congress will have to deal with as adults to keep the federal government from defaulting.
Are you going to play the adult card with your caucus if they disagree with you?
Probably.
Sounds like
I'll have my moments, I'm sure.
But it sounds like a put-down. It sounds like they're children and you're going
to
treat them as children.
No, I think we're on a pretty short line.
See, Leslie Stahl plays that off as something about, he's just afraid of the word compromise. You know, he doesn't like the word compromise. But then he says, I reject the term. I reject the term. Now, to you and I, who live in reality world, the idea of unilaterally rejecting perfectly good words in the English language strikes us as a little stupid. I reject the term compromise. Compromise, isn't that sort of to promise together or to promise with? It doesn't necessarily have the meanings that are ascribed to it in common parlance to promise with. You know, in the olden days, when one reached a compromise, you know, two semi-barbarians who hadn't quite figured out wheelbarrows yet, they would reach across and grab each other's scroti because it showed that neither one was holding a weapon and would thereby seal the deal. I'm so glad we're civilized now. But seriously, the word compromise means working together. It really does, as Boehner notes. Who, by the way, swore he had never been in a tanning bed in his life. Yeah, okay, you just look like that, John. That's an even deeper cause for concern. I'm not going to compromise on my principles, nor am I going to compromise the will of the American people. Will of the American people? Which one would that be, John? The one that you made up? The one that plays inside your head? But it's not just as Leslie Stahl said about him being afraid of the word. It has a much deeper existential meaning, much more resonance. He won't compromise, and he didn't compromise. Because that's not what Republicans do. That's what we do. Or they slap us around and say mean things about us like, they're liberals! And then we wet ourselves and run crying home. My mommy, they called us a liberal. They don't compromise. See, she sets up that false, that line of BS there. Well, you compromised. You didn't get your tax cuts forever. She is proceeding from a false assumption that he wanted them. That's like saying that Republicans want to end abortion. What a line of hooey. What a load of crap. We all know that the Republicans don't want to end abortion, because if they end abortion, their knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing fundamentalist followers, bunches of them will be out of work because that's a permanent industry, ending abortion, and they might actually have to go and get an honest job for an honest day's wage. And secondly, the people who only show up, I'm going to vote. I wouldn't ordinarily go to vote, Marvelline, I wouldn't, but I gotta go out and vote for the unborn babies because they can't vote and they're getting flushed down the toilet right now. They wouldn't come out anymore. And the Republicans would go back to being what they are. A nearly dead party. They don't compromise. John Ball and Boner, who cried at least three times during the interview, Ball and Boner, and the mascara didn't run. Ball and Boner didn't want those tax cuts extended in perpetuity. Ball and Boner wanted those tax cuts extended exactly to where he got them extended to, so that they would be in play as the central seminal issue for the 2012 presidential cycle. And if you were Ball and Boner, you'd want it that way too. Because the president does not have the stomach for the fight. Kind of like what Carl Levin said. What was that line again? What was that line? I lost it. Doggone it. I don't see that kind of a willingness to fight that hard where he will take that kind of a position, and that's what's necessary. And see, the fact that, yeah, I know, the apologists can say, but he's not a member of the Senate, he's not a member of the House. Well, see, the majority leader of the Senate is Harry Reid, and I think Carl Levin knows he can't look to Harry Reid for anything approaching that kind of leadership. If it's going to come from anywhere, it has to come from the president. Because there is a leadership vacuum in the Senate. They don't compromise. They will never compromise. That's some compromise when you get $801 billion in exchange for 55 that run out in 13 months. That's not a compromise. That's a gut stomping. That's a 12-year-old bully taking the 6-year-old's milk money. That's what that is. There's no compromise in a hostage situation. You either save the hostages, or the hostage taker wins. If the hostage takers fly away on a helicopter and live to do it again another day, but you saved the hostages, yeah, that was important. But you also have created a situation where the hostage takers will do it again, and there will sooner or later be another group of hostages. I did it again today, that act of sublime futility of picking up the phone and calling my two senators and my one member of the House, begging them, please, don't knuckle under on this. But the other day, during the discussion that was not a filibuster, that was had on the floor of the House by Bernie Sanders, during Mary Landrieu's few moments, she noted that I don't know which senator told her, but the senator from West Virginia had told her that there are 599 millionaires in West Virginia. Wow. Out of a population of 1 million. The first thing that came to my mind was, well, let's see, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 members of the West Virginia congressional delegation, so that means there are 599 millionaires in West Virginia, and 594 of them aren't in Congress. You can take it to 593 because the new so-called acting governor is a millionaire. There are millionaires all over the legislature of the state of West Virginia. Millionaire coal barons. One of those millionaires is, we were talking about him just last Friday, Jack Whitaker. I don't know if he's still a millionaire or not, but I would presume he is. But the idea of trying to convince 2 millionaire senators to vote against themselves, well, yeah, I knew I was on a fool's errand, but fools do the errand anyway, don't they? Yeah, they do. It is Moran Monday, and I have not touched upon the, I've noted it in the past, there is a difference. There are dangerous homicidal Morans, and there are the ones that are simply humorous. Well, we have a case of one of the dangerous homicidal Morans in today's breaking news, of course. I offer you the name of Federal District Judge Henry Hudson. Yeah, different Henry Hudson than the one you learned about in grade school. Henry Hudson, a George W. Bush appointee, gave the right wing its fondest wish earlier today, issuing a decision about the Affordable Care Act, what the right wing loves to refer to as Obamacare, that was filed in the Commonwealth of Virginia by Virginia Attorney General Ken I Hate Gay People Cuccinelli. Damned if Henry Hudson, Bush appointee, didn't rule with the right-wing thug Ken Cuccinelli. If you go to the New York Times story about the case, there is a link there to the 42-page opinion. If you've got any taste at all for reading the legal mumbo-jumbo gobbledygook, you will find that to be 42 scintillating pages. It is the dream come true of an incoming Republican House who campaigned on repealing Obamacare and getting our country back to where we can be sick and die without no coverage like George Washington wanted us to, and Jeebus. Because, you see, the coverage of the story suggests, here's what the New York Times has to say about it. But the ruling is likely to create confusion among the public. I'm confused, Marvelline. Does that ruling mean that Obamacare really is fascist communism? Yeah. The ruling is likely to create confusion among the public and further destabilize political support for legislation that is under fierce attack from Republicans in Congress and in many state houses. Really? Create confusion among the public? That's code. That's New York Times code for this is going to send more baggers into the streets carrying guns and signs about not getting trod upon. But that line just no, it doesn't create confusion and destabilize anything. It sets up a dream come true scenario for the right wing. Because there is now, most of these other suits that have been brought against the Affordable Care Act have been summarily tossed as being without merit. This one, however, went to a right-wing ideologue with really, really nasty ties to right-wing judicial organizations. I forget what the one Henry Hudson's in. It's like, judicial emergency! Or some sort of bull like that. And what you now have is a conflict. A conflict amongst the circuits. Because this thing will be appealed to Richmond, to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. And win or lose, there's still a conflict among the circuits. And there's nothing like a conflict among the circuits to make the Supreme Court say, yep, we want to hear this one. Oh, here's the best part. If you read the 42 scintillating pages of Henry Hudson's right-wing, what you will find is that he makes reference to Tentherism. Really? And the whole thing is set up and framed like a goddamn Rush song. Remember that line? And if you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice? Yeah. Because the argument put forward by the secretary, the good guys in this case, was that even if you choose not to purchase health care, you still made an economic decision. For a variety of reasons that are actually correct. But the fact of the matter is, there's now a conflict. And that will give the Supreme Court all it needs to take cognizance of the case. And we can do the vote counting now. Who will vote to strike down the Affordable Care Act? The rats will. Roberts, Alito, Thomas, Scalia. And from what we now know about the pitiful, desperate for love, desperate for acclamation, Kennedy, he will too. Boom. 5 votes, Affordable Care Act, gone. It really is that easy. Meanwhile, the Republicans in the Congress get so, we didn't have nothing to do with that. We didn't strike down Obamacare. We didn't do that. We never said we wanted to. That was a fine piece of legislation is what that was. We was just loving that Obamacare. We wanted to get it more money. Yeah, we did. But now a bunch of activist judges has struck it down, and well, that's just too bad. We'll see if we can't get after that just as soon as we get done passing this here flag burning amendment. Tell me I'm wrong. Really. I desperately want to be wrong about this. But I don't think I am. No, it's beautiful, isn't it? Henry Hudson's one of those dangerous to human beings kind of morons. But he is certainly... He is certainly a morion. But of course, behind all of these morons always lurks the morons that we are. Because we sit in front of our electronic morphine drip and wait for change. It happens in the streets, not in front of the TV. Just say it. I wouldn't say a word about it if I hadn't, from time to time, been in the streets. but you know I'm right. You know I never, no, I try not to say right. You know I am correct. It's a little bit egotistical on my part, but really, aren't we? So that's where we begin Moran Monday for, oddly enough, this Monday, the 13th of December, 2010. I hope you will join in with your own nominations. I hope you will join in with your thoughts. You know, like I said, tell me I'm wrong if I am. I would like to be wrong, especially on that. But this is one of those where you don't have to have a crystal ball. You just have to understand the nature of the sociopathic behavior of your average garden variety Repiglican. Yeah. So chime in. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes rolling into Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
I knew a girl who was almost a lady. She had a way with all the men in her life. Every inch of her blossom and beauty. She was born on the 4th of July. Well, she lived in an aluminum house trailer. And she worked in a jukebox saloon. And she spent all the money that I give her just to see the old man in the moon. I used to sleep at the foot of Old Glory and awake in the dawn's early light. But much to my surprise, when I opened my eyes, I was a victim of the Great Compromise. Well, you go out on Saturday evenings to the driving on Route 41. And it was there that I first suspected that she was doing what she'd already done. She said, "Johnny, won't you get me some popcorn?" And she knew I had to walk pretty far. And as soon as I passed through the moonlight, she hopped into a foreign sports car. I used to sleep at the foot of Old Glory and awake in a dawn's early light. But much to my surprise, when I opened, I was a victim of the Great Compromise. Well, you know, I could have beat up that fella, but it was her that had hopped into his car. And many times I fought to protect her, but this time she was going too far. Now some folks, they call me a coward, 'cause I left her at the driving that night. But I'd rather have names thrown at me than to fight for a thing that ain't right. I used to sleep at foot of Old Glory and awake in the dawn's early light. But much to my surprise, when I opened my eyes, I was a victim of the Great Compromise. Well, she writes all the fellas love letters, saying, "Greetings, come and see me real soon." And they go and light up in the barroom, spend the night in that sick woman's room. But sometimes I get awful lonesome, and I wish she was my girl instead. But she won't let me live with her, and she makes me live in my head. I used to sleep at the foot of Old Glory, and awake in the dawn's early light. But much to my surprise, when I opened eyes, I was a victim of the great compromise.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Here we go with the second hour, and your nominations are rolling in. We've got a nomination for Spencer Baucus of Alabama, who had one of those little moments of repiglic and Freudian candor earlier over the weekend when he gave an interview and said, describing Congress, "We exist to serve the banks." He then did some walk back, and, well, I mean, that wasn't exactly what I said. I mean, well, yeah, it was exactly what you said, Spencer. You just got caught telling the truth, and it's damned unusual for you. You don't know quite what to do with yourself when you do it. We exist to serve the banks. Thank you, sir. May I have another? That nomination rolling in for a number of folks, not the least of whom is our buddy Marty. There will be more nominations forthcoming, to say the least. Let's go to the phones, however. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, Susan, what's up?
First of all, how am I coming through?
Oh, you're fine.
Oh, cool. Okay. Would you care to discuss election politics?
Sure.
Especially in regards to this tax agreement, which looks like it's going to be passed. Okay. A few months down the line, the the Republican machine rolls into gear. It's starting already, but I mean it goes into high gear for the 2012 election. Now, how soon after this bill is signed into law do you think it's going to take before you start seeing ads with messages to the effect, Barack Obama is going to take away your Social Security?
Not long.
30 seconds, maybe?
If that.
Yeah.
See, that's what President Not Sure doesn't really understand, is that they're 14 moves ahead of him on nine different boards.
My balls with this. Pardon the crudity, Barack, but that's life. They are going to nail you to the wall. And the part with the election...
Well, no, let me extend your query for a moment. How long will it be after this deal is signed before the ads start hitting the airwaves? And not really ads. It's a little early in the process yet for that. But before the pundits run out to, you know, press the meet the prostitutes this week with George Snuffleupagus or whatever the hell. I'm sorry, this week with Christiana Monpour. How long will it be before the pundit, that Barack Obama, he's running up our deficit. Oh, we're going to die from that deficit that one done give us. Oh, them deficits is terrible things. While at the same, you know, and no one will call them on the fact that they were the ones who wanted it.
Yeah. And then, of course, there will be the standard line, tax and spend Democrat.
Yep.
This
is one of those why do I bother kind of things, and not with regard to you, but with regard to the larger picture. If this is going to happen, as it appears that it will, Susan.
No, if about it, it's certain.
Well, yeah, I know. But, when this happens, wouldn't it be nice? Wouldn't it be nice to have President Not Sure go to the podium, you know, that bully pulpit he's got that he's not real fond of using, and say, I have just jacked up the deficit by $51 billion, or $56 billion, for some of the most desperate people in this country. I have jacked up the deficit by $801 billion for the least desperate in this country. I will personally go and whip the shit out of the first republic, and I hear say a goddamned word about the deficit. Am I understood?
Never gonna happen.
Not in a million years.
No. Now, do you remember during one of the election coverages on MSNBC, before Tim Russert died, he held up this little poster board, and it said, the four most important states in this election. I think it was the 2004 election. And he wrote down Florida, 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 Florida.
I do remember that. Usually when I think about Tim Russert, I think about the little animation that Bart Cop runs from time to time that just has Tim Russert constantly saying Clinton's cock, Clinton's cock, Clinton's cock. Yeah, but never mind.
Anyway, does Barack understand that the minute he signs this into law, and therefore puts Social Security in jeopardy, he loses Florida, he loses Arizona, he loses the entire Sun Belt because of all of those nice people on Social Security? Republicans won't need to do the attack ads because they aren't stupid. If your income is based on Social Security, duh.
Duh.
That means he just condemned himself to a one term. He's done. Stick a fork in him. The minute he signs to send a law with that Social Security goodie in there, stick a fork in him, he's done.
Well, interesting you would mention that because Sandra sent me a link from The Hill. According to a brand spanking new Bloomberg National poll released today, 45% of U.S. adults said that Barack Obama deserves to be ousted in 2012. 42% want him reelected. 4% say their decision depends on alternatives. and 9% were not sure.
Mm-hmm. He's in deep doo-doo, and he apparently is living in such a bubble he has no idea.
I would not necessarily disagree with you. He is in. It's the bubble.
Yeah, it's the bubble, and apparently he has surrounded himself so much that nobody can apparently get through to him with reality. Now, here's what. On a little different subject. Perhaps I am being snotty. But consider my Scots ancestry and act accordingly. But I don't know about you, but it would just doom the cockles of my heart no end of good to see some senator, preferably a liberal, every time a Republican measure came over from the House, every goddamn time, I want to hear some liberal senator stand up and say, I object.
It would be just, if nothing else.
Pay him back in kind.
Well, they're going to have to do that anyway, because there's not going to be anything come out of the House of Representatives except toxic right-wing fulminating crap. I mean, they've got a majority to pass bills, and pass them they will. And if some liberal in the Senate doesn't do as you have described, Susan, then that means relying on Barack Obama to use his veto pen.
Barack Obama doesn't necessarily have the spine to find a damn thing.
If he even wants one.
I'm beginning to think the person with the spine in the family is Michelle.
Well, just remember, you know, he's a compromiser. He's bipartisan. He wants the best for everybody. He just wants some of the everybody to have better than some of the other everybody. It's sort of Orwellian, kind of like Out of Animal Farm.
Yeah. Oh, and that judge in Virginia.
Henry Hudson, yes.
Yes. He has financial ties to Cuccinelli.
Oh, it doesn't surprise me. Look, you know, he's a George W. Bush appointee. He is, therefore, dirty.
Yes.
And the stuff is beginning to come out among other things. But see, he's just a district judge. This thing has to go up to the Fourth Circuit, and it really does. It creates the perfect judicial vehicle for getting this in front of the rats.
God help us all.
So everybody who wanted, the firebaggers over there, the Hampshire crowd that wanted the bill defeated, they're going to get what they want. The teabaggers who wanted the bill defeated, they're going to get what they want. And the only people who aren't going to get anything at all out of it are the people who are going to continue to die, not because of the disease they have, not because of the inoperability of their illness, but are simply going to die because they don't have health care coverage. Oops, they lose.
But then again, you see, they don't really count. They're just people. They're not people who matter.
They're not immortal people like healthcare corporations. Exactly. Susan, good to hear from you, dear. Y'all aren't getting hammered with winter out there, are you?
We're getting floods.
Well, at least it ain't frogs.
It's like there's no tomorrow.
Yeah, at least it ain't frogs and locusts. Yet.
Yeah. Well, give it a chance. fortunately, we don't have a snowpack that's in the process of flooding us out, but we are getting floods all over the place. It's been raining like crazy. I feel for you, for those people buried in snow. I really do. That's got to be. That's.
Well, we're okay so far. We ain't the Metrodome. Of course, then again, it also bears in conjunction with the Metrodome. It should also be noted that about 15 minutes before the Humpy Dome's roof collapsed, Brett Favre was seen entering the building carrying a 10-gauge Beretta limited edition goose gun. But never mind. I'll get carped at for bringing up sports. But anyway, Susan, have a good night.
What the? You too. Give my love to Doodle and Agnes.
Sure will, and everybody else. Talk to you soon.
Okay, bye bye.
Bye now. News Ninja Susan calling from Oregon, and we proceed apace. Hey, welcome to the program.
How you doing?
What's up, Jim?
You?
You know it.
Well, as far as this particular item with Obamacare going through the court system,
mm-hmm.
Remember what happened to the NRA back in 1936?
No, not off the top of my head.
I struck it down. It was ruled unconstitutional. And that's the reason FDR tried to pack the court.
Oh, I'm sorry. You said NRA, and I thought National Rifle. Yeah, the National Recovery Act. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And that's the same, strategy these people are going to employ by putting this through the courts. They're going to take it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court's going to strike down the whole Obamacare. And that's what's happened. It's going to happen.
And then it'll be America again.
Well, it's just, I hate to say it, it's just business as usual. I mean, these people are in the ascendancy. They have the power. And they don't have anybody like Obama who would even try to do what FDR did, even though FDR failed in his efforts to pack the Supreme Court, you know, because, in my opinion, the guy just doesn't have any balls.
I think all that bipartisanship and so forth may be masquerading that very fact, Jim.
Well, I mean, this bipartisanship is like what I just sent you in an email. Compromise is not compromise. It's called appeasement. And what they're going to do before too long in holding these people on unemployment as hostage, they're going to, in my opinion, within a year or two, they're going to try to hold Social Security and other programs.
Well, remember that the payroll tax holiday is going to go a long way toward getting the camel's nose under the Social Security tent, toward ultimately killing Social Security.
Well, I don't know about that, Bob.
Yeah, it will, because once you turn that into something that you can turn on and turn off, then that means Social Security, what we do is transfer it from an entitlement to a welfare program. That's what it boils down to.
Well, maybe you're right, maybe you're wrong. I don't agree with that right now. But it could happen. But I see Social Security being held hostage in 2 years the way that they're holding these people who are given the 13-month extension on unemployment. And I don't see forthcoming any fifth tier for the 99ers. Do you?
No, I don't. Nothing is going to be done for the 99ers. Because the nice thing about the 99ers is you don't have to count them anymore. They disappeared. They disappear from the calculations.
They go right off. They're off the radar.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, Mr. Obama is not like Bill Clinton. He's not willing to go to the mat. He's not willing to really challenge these people the way they should be challenged. He's just going to go along. And if he is a Democratic nominee in 2012, I can guarantee you he will be defeated.
The only way he wins.
He has no way to win.
Yeah, there is. Absolutely. He wins if his prayers are answered. And Sarah Palin is the Republican nominee.
Well,
but Sarah Palin is a stalking horse. She's no more going to be the Republican nominee for president in 2012 than I am.
Well, I yeah, Sarah Palin. I happen to see some shots of her thing they have on one of the programs, I think the Discovery Channel.
Mm-hmm.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm sure somebody out there will. And that she's there with a high-powered rifle.
And what, take six shots at a caribou and the caribou doesn't move?
I don't know, but the fact that she would do something like that to kill a beautiful living thing that she's not going to use for food or whatever, I mean...
Well, from the standpoint of someone who is admittedly not a good hunter, you know, the running joke about me back in my deer hunting days was a buddy of mine said he heard a couple of bucks talking, and he said, if that Kincaid fella gets you any sights, stand perfectly still. If you start running, he might hit you. But if you stand still, he doesn't have a prayer. That was, you know, I was that bad. You know, your worst bet is that he might walk one into you. But no, from a hunting standpoint, her getting six shots at a caribou, it's kind of unlikely.
Did she kill it?
Oh, yeah. Chopped it up and everything.
Oh, that's wonderful.
But the thing is, that had to be, that was, excuse me, Jim. You remember when Dick Cheney would go bird hunting? And they had to release the birds from a net?
Who did I, Dick?
Yeah. Yeah, Count Dickula.
Yeah. Count Dickula.
Yeah, he had to have his birds released from a net because and shoot them at point-blank range because he wasn't a decent wing shooter. Well, I have a feeling it was the same thing with Mussolini's caribou. I got a feeling that was a just about drugged onto its knees caribou. Because generally they'll run at the sound of rifle fire. And that one just stood there. Until she managed to, you know, gut shoot it or something.
You know, I can't watch that film that about Queen Elizabeth, the one that, who's that actress who played her?
Helen Mirren,
yeah. And when she sees this beautiful, beautiful stag on her property or whatever you want to call it, and then, of course, the next shot is of the animal being hanged by its heels, and she sees it. I still can't even watch that today.
It was told to me early on because I started hunting later in life, Jim, and as was explained to me, the fun is in the hunt. All the fun ends after you squeeze the trigger, because if you've been successful, then the really gory, bloody business begins. And the first time you see a deer caped, and see it's just hanging there without its skin, it's difficult. It's difficult. It was for me, at least.
Bob, the real hunter is the hunter who goes out and doesn't have a cartridge in the chamber. It's enough to get the animal in the crosshairs. Or at least it is with me.
Well, I don't have a problem with the hunter who eats his kill.
I've seen too much killing in my life to see how anybody could take any types of pleasure in that sort of sport.
Now, I understand your position, Jim, but by the same token...
It's just like fox hunting. And Oscar Wilde said about that, you know, the unmentionable in pursuit of the inedible.
Precisely. Just barbarity. On the other hand, however, when you think about where any given piece of beef that you're likely to come across, or pork, or chicken, or it came from, then I don't know. There's something to me slightly more appealing about meat killed in the wild than meat killed at a contained animal feed operation or CAFO lot. There's something slightly more honorable about it, frankly.
Well, I don't know about, yeah, exactly. I remember they did a film in France called Blood of the Beast. I don't know if you've ever seen it or not.
No.
It was about abattoirs in France. And after that film came out, there was significant legislation in the French government to improve the situation as best they could. I mean, if that film won't send you reeling over your seat, nothing will.
Well, the same thing goes for, what is it called, Food, Inc.? I don't know if you've got Netflix or not, but it's available to watch, you know, right there on Netflix without having to get the disc in. Food, Inc., when it gets to the CAFO part, whew, that will put you off your supper.
Well.
Because the brutality of the American meat industry has been ramped up to a degree that's almost that is unconscionable and almost unbearable.
Well, I mean, didn't Sinclair Lewis write something about that called the, what was it called?
The Jungle?
The Blackboard Jungle?
No, just The Jungle.
Jungle? Yeah, okay. Excuse me, I was...
No, that's okay. Yeah, he did, but back then, it was as brutal as that was, it was different. Because it's totally mechanized now, and the cattle are kept on a lot, literally up to... Do cattle have knees? Whatever that joint is, up to those, in their own feces, eating food, namely grain, that is not meant for their systems to process. And because it wrecks their insides, they have to be given massive doses of hormones and antibiotics. And they are then slaughtered in a way that is god-awful.
Well, Kick, I understand. I know all about that. I do. And
it's even a far cry from what Sinclair Lewis was railing against.
Yeah, I know. Well, going back to what I said originally, you know, this Obamacare is going to be struck down by the Supreme Court.
Sure it will, because you've got the rats plus Kennedy. And Kennedy will follow anywhere they lead.
And, you know, like I said, and there's a historical precedent. And that is the National Recovery Act of 1936 being struck down by the Supreme Court, that particularly in like what FDR was doing in his New Deal legislation. And I think you can probably make a book on that.
I think I could too, but I'll bet you the bookies wouldn't get odds worth a damn, Jim. You'd be paying 1 to 2.
What do you mean? Why?
Why? Because it's a sure thing.
Oh, I see. I guess all my little gray cells, as Hercule Poirot would say, aren't functioning too well tonight. Maybe it's all the snow.
Yeah, it does have that effect. But, Jim, I appreciate it, and you have yourself a wonderful evening, my friend.
You too.
All right, take care. I had not thought about the National Recovery Act. I really hadn't. The email coming in from Kathy in Arizona, she says, what if the Supreme Court has a holding that is so broad that it also makes Medicare unconstitutional? Technically speaking, and granted, technically speaking, has a broad meaning when we're talking about the rats, but that question won't be before them. The question that will be presented to them, at least via the case that Henry Hudson decided today, will be whether or not the so-called compulsory coverage portion of the ACA is violative of the Constitution. And, I mean, there are nuances involved. I don't have the bill in front of me. There may be a severability clause in the ACA. I would be surprised if there isn't. A severability clause says that if one part of the act is declared unconstitutional, the rest of the act remains in effect. Hudson was even uncertain enough of his own ruling that he refused injunctive relief to Ken Cuccinelli, so the act remains, all portions of the act remain in effect, pending decision on appeal. He was doing the bidding of the right wing because he is a member of the right wing. He was giving a little bit of the imprimatur of legitimacy to the tenthers. Again, if you go read the New York Times story, you can read the actual 42-page opinion yourself. And it has elements of Tentherism in it. Which will be, you know, which was a little bit surprising because the Tenth Amendment is rather, Tenth Amendment is rather vague and vacuous. So I don't think there's, I don't think there are any Medicare implications in it. But there are certainly possibilities for opening the door to that in a later piece of litigation. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program,
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so actually, that reduction in the payroll tax, you know, it can't be looked at any other way except for, you know, a backdoor means of reducing revenue to the Social Security that was at before out of the sort of crosshairs of the government per se, but now when they try to bring it back, of course they can say, oh, it's a
tax increase.
A tax increase, and it becomes even more of a political football. I mean, however you look at it, it is a way to potentially undermine Social Security. And, you know, it's just sort of mind-boggling that that's being put across as if it's something beneficial. I guess because Americans are so short-sighted or so
stupid,
short-term focused.
Stupid? Yeah, I think, you know, penny-wise and pound-foolish. You know, David in Tennessee said to me a few minutes ago, he said, if the funding for Social Security can be throttled down in any way, then its fiscal health can be called into question. And then, if it's ever viewed as failing, it can be encouraged to do so for the good of the nation.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, the whole time that this deficit commission, it's just, you know, it's been repeated ad nauseum by people with sense that the deficit has nothing to do with Social Security. Yet, they've been able to tie this madness together, which is what I'm just astounded by. So now they can get some real tie-in by undermining this revenue stream. You know, and it's just, it's horrific what's going on. And, you know, I saw some press where, you know, Obama's like, oh, and, you know, trying to tell the House to hurry up and get it done. You know, the idea that they're selling it is so gross. I'm sorry. I just, yuck. But it's a done deal.
Yeah, I'm afraid it is. But do you see what I'm saying about trying some way to disjoin unemployment from these tax cuts for the rich? Because that just it beats the daylights out of me how do you take cards in that game and allow that to happen, Sandra? Unless you're okay with it being done in the first place.
You mean putting this Social Security thing with relating it to the tax cuts, or are you talking
and
about
unemployment? Why are those three utterly disparate issues being tied together in one ugly little Gordian knot?
Yeah, no, it's incredible, and the whole disingenuousness of Obama talking about he couldn't get it any other way is so gross because, like you've played and like I've heard, Boehner has said, oh, he, you know, look, there's no way that when push comes to shove, the Republicans are going to be hanging out there with millions of people, at least in this go-round, not getting the unemployment insurance. But Obama didn't have enough, I don't know what, to just let them at it. That's the thing I can't get with. It's like, no, the Republicans have to govern. So if they were going to sit there and cut millions of people off, I highly doubt it. And he just sort of, I've never seen such craven behavior, unnecessarily, but of course what we're saying, though, is that that's what they want. You know, this is my conclusion now. I'm done with the sort of, oh, well, he's not playing the game right, because this is the same man who cut a deal with the people in the Federalist Society to get to be the head of the Harvard Law Review. So you can take a look at that for what it is.
You know, it's interesting. I read something over the weekend from somebody saying that he had finally gotten around to reading Dreams from My Father.
Yeah, yep.
And that there are a lot of clues there that weren't picked up on in 2008. There's never been any evidence, except during the primary and the general election, there's really never been any evidence that Barack Obama is the kind of fighter that many of us perceive that we need.
Well, and also the whole, like, canard with him being, you know, the sort of community activist or whatever they call. I mean, that whole period, according to Adolf, I forget his name. He's a black intellectual. He teaches at the University of Pennsylvania. Anyway, he basically wrote that, you know, Obama just subjected those people to a bootstrap sermon like Bill Cosby. And so that also ties into a sort of neoliberal mentality. You know, so I'm just starting to look at not what we thought he was, but what he is. And so this agreement goes hand in hand. And mainly I called to, I have, you know, that Ishmael thing you sent me. That was funny because I had just read that and I thought, oh no. And I like Reed, Ishmael Reed. I've always been a fan because he's really on the edge, and he was the one that took apart that Precious movie, because I thought that was just beyond insulting for black people in general. It was a disgusting movie, and he took it apart. But he is so wrong on this issue with Obama. It's like, no.
Yeah, and what's important is he was wrong on the op-ed pages of the New York Times.
Well, that's the thing. It was just interesting. I mean, I can understand what he's talking about, but I just, you know, I can't apply it to Obama, because like I wrote back to you and told you why I think this is going on. Did you see that article that I sent you with how much money they want to raise?
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to, you know, what fool, you know, you got to be a fool not to see where your money's coming from. And this bodes well for Obama, because the money people can't say he ain't come to their aid. And next on the agenda is a little meeting with the CEOs. What is he going to do, beg for job creation? What is he going to do there, Bob?
No, I think it'll go right to the heart of the matter, Sandra.
Well, I'm just saying.
And the heart of the matter is, maybe, you know, I tell you, in my conversation with Susan, I suggested, you know, wouldn't it be fun to hear him, the minute that this thing is passed, come out and say, now, shut the up about deficits. But what he may do, we may see, you know, we'll never see it, but he may get his back up with the CEOs and so forth and say, you know what? I don't want to hear any more of this. I want you to shut down the fascist, Islamist, Muslim, Kenyan, the horse crap. I want it to end, and it ends yesterday, because I just gave you everything you wanted. But the problem is, they get to look at him and go, and we're going to throw your ass out in another year. Don't you understand that?
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing where the constant capitulation is what's so frightening, because it's like, dude, they had already used you up. Why should they have your black face in there now when they can just put in who they want? And I tie this in with the big hole they're continuing to blow into the deficit to, you know, one thing we learned in international relations is a thing called state capacity, which is always the problem in sort of sub-Saharan Africa. The state has never been able to have enough income or wherewithal to provide the services for people. So what we're looking at here is a direct assault on the U.S.'s ability to have state capacity. If the, you know what I'm saying? If you can't provide the services for the citizenry, people are so dumb. Where are we supposed to turn if the government isn't able to do it? Our friendly corporation?
No, the church.
Well, the thing is, though, but it's just so absurd to listen to these Republicans. It's like, okay, wait, so you want to just completely shrink government to the point of what? I mean, people are in for a rude awakening in this country if they think that having smaller government is going to bode well for them. How'd you like it in 1927, smaller government?
Well, the problem is there's nobody here who remembers 1927, Sandra.
No, I understand, but, you know, this is what we're looking at. I mean, we had the largest increase in the federal government during the New Deal. That's a fact. That was a major transformation.
Until we got to Ronald Reagan.
Yeah, but there was a reason for that huge growth, though.
Because there were needs that had to be met.
Yeah, and the way the government was laid out, just being responsible for commerce and, you know, that business, went out the window when the whole piece of shit fell apart because of the greed. And And now we're back to the same thing, I fear, with mealy-mouthed, bought captive people in charge. And so if the state capacity is disrupted, you know, we're just looking towards a real nightmarish country because I don't really know. I don't know what to think.
Well, let me ask you a question out of all of this because, you know, I rebel not only against Barack Obama's bubble, but against our own. And I think it may be stated with a fair degree of statistical certainty where the Horn family stands with regard to this boondoggle cave-in legislation. How then, because it's been trumpeted a lot all over creation, Sandra, how then to explain those statistics that say 72% of Democrats approve of Barack Obama, 85% of the black community approves of Barack Obama, and it's been trumpeted by the apologists as, you know, he's doing a great job and you know, you liberal hippies just need to, you know, shut up.
Well, and that's exactly what is going to happen. I mean, you know, there's no way that did you look at that diary I sent to you from
yourself?
Yeah, there is no way that and the person who wrote that, I can't, you know, they're not going to separate. They will separate from the progressives before agreeing. I'll tell you that for sure. Because the progressives are falling into the rut that Christopher Hedges speak of, which is ineffectual. So why would any group turn to that? The power resides where it is, which is in this case in Obama. You see what I'm saying? So, yeah, there's a lot of questions out there. I'm not, you know, I don't have any answers. I just like to bitch. But, you know, there's a lot of, no, all that is really valid with the high approval ratings. But you have to understand that minorities, and I do agree with what Reed said, that, you know, minorities, we have not had much. So it isn't so shocking on that level. I do agree with him in that regard. But I think he's assigning way too much to Obama. That's my problem.
And yeah, this is the author is Ishmael Reed. The title of the piece is What Progressives Don't Understand About Obama, and he comes to this point where he says if Obama was to get all up in America's face, that he would be called. One progressive commentator played an excerpt from a Harry Truman speech, during which Truman screamed about the Republican Party to great applause. He recommended this style to Mr. Obama. If President Obama behaved that way, he'd be dismissed as an angry black militant with a deep hatred of white people. His grade would go from a B- to a D. But the problem with that analysis, Sandra, is that he's already there.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing that was, that's why, yeah, I didn't realize, and I think you mentioned that in your email too, and that's the thing. It's like, well, no, he's already been called that. That's not the issue anymore. So that's why I have to step away and look at Dreams of My Father and like that stuff you're talking about and his deal with the Federalist Society and the constant running to the right that he's done his whole career. That ain't got nothing to do with being a black man in America. That's all about I'm going to get what I'm going to get and this is what I'm going to do to get it. And if all you progressives and other freaks see something you want to see, well, good luck to you.
I'm better than Palin.
Good luck to you. And the whole sort of black, Latino, progressive divide, yeah, that's I think that's pretty real because, you know, like my mother is one of the – she actually is agrees with me. She's looking at that fool and thinking, oh, no. But most of my other family members and friends of color – they can't hear it. It's Obama, and that's it. And not that they don't see what's going on, but they certainly aren't going to be told by a bunch of white liberals anything. You understand what I'm saying about that?
About tired of, yeah, because they're tired of being told things.
Right. And so it's, you know, when, like I said, the power is already there. And if you identify with it, you know, you're not going to hear different things. And it's to the detriment of these communities, because I'm sorry, 50% unemployment for black males, you know, similar type numbers.
Well, those again, those numbers that Mary Landrieu laid out when she was talking with Bernie on Friday, when she was talking about income disparity.
Yeah.
Those were stark.
No, and then you tie it back to debilitating the state or the government, and we got some big problems because, trust me, the government, as faulty as it may be, is the only option that ordinary people have to affect any changes, because the powerful and the privileged is getting more and more powerful. They don't give a F about the American population. I mean, it's like, when are people going to stop tying their fortunes to what these rich people are doing? They don't give. And ever since they allowed free capital all over the world, they're creating jobs in every other place in the world.
Yeah, because it costs more to...
Well, guess who's not doing that? Brazil.
I take it you saw the piece on 60 Minutes last night?
Hell yeah, and I'm just like, duh. And I was really surprised to see 60 Minutes roll like that, because it's like, a lot of people watch 60 Minutes. Some people might be scratching their heads today. I hope they are.
Well, but see, if they are, there's a certain percentage of this country that's going, well, you know, socialist. And the minute they hear the word socialist, everything else just turns into... You see what I'm saying?
No, I understand that. This is like one of the most propagandized societies in the world, and it takes a lot to get stuff through. But I thought it was really interesting that they did that show, that story, and it's just so interesting.
Well, what I found fascinating, and I don't know how they make these decisions, but you know, how do they decide what story will run in which edition? Because to sit there and have the Boner Puff piece butted up next to a success story about a country rising out of corruption and poverty based upon principles of responsible regulation of an industry, banking, that tends to run out of control, and lo and behold, they're creating billionaires everywhere.
Yeah, and also they don't have no problems with capital controls, and I think they're going to increase them as more dollars are let loose in the system, just driving messing with their currency. They're going to start putting more requirements on capital. I mean, it's interesting what's going on in Brazil, and don't get me wrong, Brazil has issues, trust me.
Oh, gosh.
The constant clearing out of the slums to get ready for the Olympics, you know, that's about doing my head in. So, and they got, you know, hella poverty, but they have a huge manufacturing base. That's the key. Ask Alexander Hamilton. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, indeed. And what's more, you can't overestimate or overemphasize the fact that they didn't let the bubble happen to them.
They did. I know, it's amazing. If you look at their sort of, you know, everyone suffered a minute when the Anglo-Saxon capitalist system imploded in 2008, but they certainly have recovered all right.
It was a little depressing for me, though, Sandra, because earlier in the day, based on a recommendation from Roger Ebert, I'd gone over to Netflix and watched a Portuguese film, subtitled, of course. And, you know, you watch a film in French or Spanish or German, you can pick out a word here and there. Portuguese, not so much. And it just sort of let me know that I got no future in Brazil.
Oh, yeah, and that language, too, is off the hook. But, yeah, no, it's just kind of, I don't know, I'm just starting to think, damn, people are just so gullible here, and they're so weird. And the way this whole deal is being spun as a means to help Obama, I mean, a lot of things have to occur for this to help him. A, some, you know, millions of jobs are going to have to appear, and I'm not too sure where they're going to appear from. Do you have any idea?
No.
And what happens in 13 months? Are all those people supposed to have jobs by then?
See, that's the part I don't get.
And I don't understand how they, you know, when...
In 13 months, is the Republican Congress suddenly going to develop a moral or ethical sense and When are they going to create a tier five?
Well, no, but he would have been better off if he had to make this deal to make the extension for 3 years. You know, it's not
right. I mean, if it's good enough to extend the tax cuts for 2 years for $801 billion.
No, he could have done for three to keep it out, you know, so it's not a conversation at least for the election. I mean, I just don't understand. I don't understand the calculus.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. You know, at this point, we're dealing with mathematics. It costs $56 billion to extend unemployment for 13 months and not even include the 99ers.
Well, this is why I think I'm.
You could do it. So you know, under those circumstances, you could have. Let's see, what is 80 divided by 5? 16?
Yeah.
You could have extended it 16 times over, and still only there reached the tax cuts for the rich threshold.
Well. I mean, and to me, once again, I'm back to the sort of scream about the deficit, and I'm like, excuse me, where's Moody and Fisk and all the bondholders? Why aren't they freaking out of their minds over this? I thought we were in some sort of debt sovereignty crisis coming up real soon. You know, I think so much of it is such BS.
And that's why, that's why I went with the reference to Uncle Remus. You know. Please don't throw me in that old deficit patch. Because they want to be thrown in the deficit patch.
Well, I mean, that makes me wonder about, you know, because the sort of crocodile tears about the massive unemployed is bullshit to me. You know, Obama could have done a work program. He could have done it. He ain't going to do it because it's against the neoliberal mentality. They don't believe in that. The man is forever denigrating the 60s, always praising Reagan. I mean, I'm sorry. And
But Sandra, what do you expect when you come from the University of Chicago?
Yeah, but the thing is that...
Milton Friedman's in the water there.
I know, it's true. But, I mean, the thing is that we have to, you know, figure out, you know, some other actions that can go on. Or it's just a wait and watch the economy crumble. I don't know what, Bob. I really don't know, but I just don't really see it working out the way that I get the Obama administration thinks that it's going to.
Do you really think they think it is?
Well, I'm not too sure. I'm not too sure if Obama, is he there to seriously preside over the decline?
Well, I mean, but you know, you he said it's... See, that's what I don't get, and I've got enough of an ego to think it's not because I'm dumb. Does he's gonna campaign against the tax cuts for the rich in 2012? Just because his name wasn't on the ballot in 10, did he pay no attention whatsoever to the amount of Citizens United money that came in? That was for midterm elections, Sandra. They will bury him in Citizens United money.
No, I think that it's almost the opposite of what you're saying. I remember how he said in the State of the Union, he sort of called out the judges for making that decision, right?
Right.
And then he saw the $4 billion spent in midterm, and he probably thought, oh, fucking shit. And this is the response to it. Because he's going to do whatever he needs to do to get the money. Because he sees the writing on the wall. And maybe this is how he thinks he's going to... stay afloat.
But you know that
I think that's what they're thinking.
You know that article you sent me though says that he may be the first $1 billion campaigner.
Exactly, because they're saying that incumbency is going to give him a leg up. But I'm, you know, if we go back to what we were saying before, that the powers that be are like, we can put one of ours in now. See you, Negro. Here's your seat on the board of fuck whoever corporation, and have at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because you know what? He's not going to go off and form Habitat for Humanity.
Oh, whatever. I mean, it's just, but you know, hey, maybe he'll get the second term because the Republicans, I still am not their sort of presidential aspirations, not sure. But I remember talking a long time ago with you about the, oh, shit, they just, you know, they throw up McCain because they want.
They didn't want it.
They want some Democrat in there. So we can go back to that discussion, too. I think that, you know, we are all just sort of being played, and maybe we have moments of insight in our little horn family.
And I think that's what drives me crazier than anything, Sandra, is this idea that I'm a helpless spectator to a piece of theater that doesn't play by any known theatrical rules.
And unfortunately, we spectate. You see, that's the thing that is probably going to be our undoing, whereas the rest of the people are just doing what they do.
Okay,
so
I can't either. Let me ask you. Yeah, no, what you're describing is, when the ancient Greeks were busy inventing theater, when a Greek playwright would get to a real trouble spot in his script, and he'd gotten himself in a place where he couldn't get out of it.
Mm.
That's why they invented. It was a little bitty crane, and it had like a. It was just like Mary Martin doing Peter Pan. You know, when she flies out on the wire. Well, the Greeks did the same damn thing, only it was a little more obvious because they lacked a certain amount of sophistication and technology. But they had a crane with a vest on it, and they'd take some dude in a toga and, put a big beard on him and give him a couple of lightning bolts and call him Zeus, hook him to the crane, swing the damn thing out with him on it, 15 feet in the air, out over the stage, and plot problem was resolved because God intervened. It was called a deus ex machina, God from the machine. And that's what I fear that Barack Obama is trying, is hoping will happen for him. And it's going to work. Whether the deus ex machina is Palin the nominee, or maybe the Republicans will screw up these 2 years so badly that the independents will turn around and say, I don't like them either, time to throw those bastards out too. Well, I got news. It doesn't work in modern theater.
I still get... I'm not too sure, but the bubble factor, which is what you and Susan was talking about too, could play out. Because if I see that David Axelrod, he don't know what the hell he's talking about either.
Oh, he's doing great. Hey, boss, you're doing great, boss. Did you see what he said on one of the Sunday programs? It was Christiane Amanpour who was asking him about the whole, appeasement, capitulation, compromise, whatever we want to call it. And he looked at her and said, "Now listen, I'm not here. And in this case, they were talking about trying to bring the Democrats into the fold to go along with the deal. And Axelrod said, "I'm not here to negotiate." And I couldn't
help. Listen, that's goddamn. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I mean, I did the same thing. Spit take, coffee, monitor, done. Because it's so funny to me that he will sit down and negotiate away, our birthright, not his, but ours, for a bowl of cold porridge. But when it comes to talking to members of his own party, "I'm not here to negotiate."
Yeah, no, it's way bizarre. And I also think, though, that we need to be careful, because when the shit does come undone, guess who's going to get blamed for it?
Us.
Right, there is that.
Oh, there will be hippie punching all over creation.
There is that formation going on, and the Israel Reed, he's making sure that the Negroes are involved. I'm sorry, I don't mean to. I really shouldn't make light of it, but the sort of issues that some activists have with kind of the whole white progressive, and I say that in a general sense, it's always good for a laugh, I have to say.
Oh, yeah. You mean the crowd with their teeth clenched, clutching their gold chains and chest hair?
Yeah, and it's just kind of, it's always such a tenuous alliance, let's just say that.
Well, to say the least. I do, and, the question, Sandra, out of all of this, because I've had some really ugly things going through my head over the weekend, I hesitate to say it because it's going to get me in shit with somebody, the unemployment issue is topmost in my mind. I think working American people can afford the, extra $50 on a paycheck that it might cost for the middle class tax rates to rise.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the unemployment thing that drives me crazy. And my question is, what is it going to take? Remember when we had the story with the two unemployed women going on that Fox program, and the Indiana had hired the I don't know, Blackwater guards for the Department of Unemployment Compensation stuff, and they were saying, well, we're not going out in the streets, we just want to be treated fairly. Well, my question is, what is it going to take to get the unemployed, you know, because there are several million of them now, what's it going to take to get them out in the streets? I don't want any violence, I don't want anybody hurt, but it's not like they got to go to work. What's it going to take to get them out in the streets?
Well, no, I think that, you know, one thing to notice is that the systems of organization have been annihilated in this country. I mean, your natural unions, those sort of things aren't there.
Right, so, and that was the question, that was where the question was leading. Who puts them in the streets? You know,
but I do think that if this goes the way it's looking like it's going to go, that situation will occur. In what form, I'm not too sure. But there's no way that you won't get some sort of response. I'm just sort of fearful of how it's going to manifest, you know. But, yeah, because what about those 4 million? You know, there's already people who are surviving on the welfare that Clinton left, which is about, I think, 190 in California for an adult with no kids.
Right. And down the road, however many years it is, as a result of this new child nutrition bill in the schools that we talked about, somewhere down the road, food stamps get cut below $3 per person per day.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, you have to hear well, we won't let that happen. But see,
no, they've already said that. We'll fix that later. This is the deal we could get.
But when they get wiped out because of Citizen United... See, that's the thing I don't think that these people are looking at. Because I looked at it. I was completely terrified by the amount of money that was put in the system for this one little midterm election. So the Democrats, unless they're able to establish themselves as representing people other than the rich and the corporations too, there's no reason for them to be there. You see what I'm saying?
Right, and they wind up in the same conundrum that the Blue Dogs wound up in this go-round, where given a choice between an imitation Republican and a real one, people generally chose the real Republican over the Blue Dog. You know, that is fully one-third of the ass-beating that we took in the 2010 cycle, Sandra, and nobody seems to be paying attention to that.
Yeah, well, and I'm thinking about Texas is about to have a supermajority of Republicans governing that state, when the majority of the people in that state are Democrats. So look at Texas and look at what Washington can be, you know, in 4 years or so. You see what I'm saying?
There is a constitutional provision, Sandra, and I don't mean to keep you on so long if you got other stuff to do, but this is a wonderful conversation. There's a provision in the Constitution that what you just said about Texas and a supermajority made me think of this, because I think about this all the time, because there's a provision in the Constitution that says a member of the Congress may be removed from either body upon a two-thirds vote of the body, among other things. They did it to Adam Clayton Powell Jr., if you recall that far back. You know, he's the one that Charlie Rangel won his seat. They voted him out of the damn Congress. And they're constitutionally enabled to do so. What happened? Because you think Republicans wouldn't do that? On the day that the Republicans got two-thirds in both houses, you think they wouldn't start voting Democrats out of the House for being Democrats? Damn right they would.
Well,
because those bastards play for keeps. So, you know...
Oh. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I just got this sort of email that old Richard Holbrooke quote.
Yeah, when you have an aortic aneurysm, your odds go way down at Harris in Reno.
Oh, okay. I mean, I didn't really know what was going on. Sorry. I just, because, you know, he's like super diplomat. God, he's gone. Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't know that was a part that they could do that with that sort of majority.
Oh yeah, look it up. It's there.
Well, see, the thing about that is we're in uncharted waters with this sort of paid, you know, paid speech that we have, or protected paid speech that we have. I think, you know, the possibilities are, it's there. I mean, Texas, this freak who's deciding he's going to defect to, you know, the Republican Party, you know, I was like, damn. Because I don't think any legislative body should have supermajority. That really scares me, you know?
And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the Texas Constitution doesn't have a provision along the same lines. And you know, just because nobody's thinking about it right now, don't think that, you know, again, because they play for keeps, Sandra. Outlaw, you know, outlaw, throw you out of Congress for being a Democrat? Why not?
Well, no, but see, the thing is also, and I'll get off the phone, but I must say that the Supreme Court in this matter is really disturbing, because what they did in 2000, and now what they did with the Citizen United, I mean, no one's going to tell me that all this isn't tied together. I mean, what's going on? They don't. That doesn't represent the majority of people.
No, it doesn't. But, you know, well, let me just bring this to the table real quick, because Kathy wrote in from Arizona, and I guess I didn't fully understand the import of her question. But she said, my concern with, you know, with the ACA going up to the Supreme Court on questions of forced compulsory participation in interstate commerce. She said, my concern is that I think a person can't opt out of Medicare. Hence, if the courts hold that one can't be required to join Obama's health care, couldn't that be a precedent to rule on Medicare or even Social Security? And while, you know, my gut level, I went to law school for 3 years, reaction is, oh, of course not. My real world, real realpolitik reaction is, hey, the rats plus Kennedy will do and can do any damned thing they want to and call it justice.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, I go back to 2000. I'm sorry, they stopped a vote count and appointed Bush president because it may harm him. That is what and if they can do that without much hoopla, although I point out that it was building in this country and then we had 9/11, say what you want about that. Do you remember how dissatisfied people was with Bush when he became president?
Oh, hell yes.
It was bad. I don't know if you... I think about that sometime. I'm like, yeah, shit was getting real tense here with him. And it's interesting that all went away.
Yeah.
But that was the Supreme Court facilitating that. Now they've done this. So, you know.
Yeah, and to add into it, Maura in New Jersey says, listen, if the Republicans could convince the public that Saddam Hussein was involved with the 9/11 attacks, then why be surprised that they talk the public into the into ending Social Security if it's connected to the debt?
No, and what your friend wrote in about the opting out thing, the point I was trying to make was, if they can do that in 2000, they don't do any damn thing, because Citizen United was supposed to be a much narrower reading, and they decided to broaden it themselves. Remember that?
Absolutely. And that's what I say. All conventional wisdom, Sandra, relating to how the Supreme Court decides cases, beginning with Bush v. Gore, extending through Citizens United, that dumbass handgun ruling in Washington and Chicago, and now this going up there? No, this goes back to that conversation we had a month or so ago about ultimately the collapse of the credibility of the judicial system being the one real harbinger of the collapse of everything else. Because this is that.
Yeah, no, it's a worry. I mean, it's a real worry. So, I mean, you know, no one can read what the landscape will be like in 2 years. Like they say, you know, it's forever in politics. But this economy isn't forever, see? Shit can unravel.
But like you said, I see nothing out there, Sandra, to suggest that anything gets better. And I don't, and you know, Dean Baker and those guys, they're not saying anything that tells me anything gets any better either.
No. All the sort of reasonable, yeah, it's all not, and this deficit business, yeah, anyway, it's not really good. Oh, is Brett Favre playing tonight?
I'm not sure. Like, Like David in Tennessee said, he had a long trip back from Minneapolis after shotgunning the Metrodome.
Listen, I can believe that piece of video.
Oh, man. Well, that, you know, that's just, you know, that's just Bud Grant telling God that football's supposed to be played outdoors.
No, but that freak is getting all sorts of breaks. He, you know, he wasn't supposed to start. Now he had a little reprieve. So we'll see if he hobbles out there.
Yeah, well, no, Marty telling me that Favre has been listed as inactive.
Oh, it's over with. Okay, we don't have to hear about that anymore. That's interesting.
Yes, and Sparky, too. No Brett.
Ah! Okay, well, listen, I have to go and do the dishes now. And I'll talk to you soon.
All right. You have a great night, Sandra.
Bye.
Bye now. Oh, these conversations. A couple of emails before I go on to the next couple of phone calls. You know the number, by the way, 877-443-2366, 877-4 head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Kevin writing in from Seoul. After much consideration, I feel President Obama needs to appoint a redneck czar. Like myself, I've come to the conclusion that he does not understand the ways of the redneck. The thing is, I don't want to, and do not have to, but if you're going to be an American politician, it is imperative that you understand the ways of the redneck. I have managed to narrow this highly important secret position to three possible but highly qualified individuals. The first candidate I considered was James the Raging Cajun Carville, whose redneck credentials run far and deep, but I immediately struck him off the list because of his marriage to Republican Mary Madeline. This is a prime example of the D.C. Roach Hotel. Their Sunday news appearances have transformed them into the quintessential D.C. power couple. I also considered former President William Jefferson Clinton, who throughout his presidency made mincemeat out of the Republican bully machine in spite of several impeachment attempts. Unfortunately, I struck him off the list because of the Clinton affiliation with the Bilderberg Group, and the Clintons also have become a D.C. power couple. I've managed to narrow it down to John Edwards, who's basically nothing to lose, which makes him an extremely effective redneck czar. His credentials run far and deep because he stood up to both the Republican Party in Ohio in 2004 and the Democratic establishment for giving away the election so easily. Take it from someone who lived amongst them for four miserable years. The American redneck is a strange and mysterious beast which needs to be understood. Finally, my brother Bob, I know enough that you could easily be included in this group of people. I pray every day, I pray justice will not be dealt on the innocent like you and other good, decent, humane Southerners who fight the good fight every day. P.S. A good hunter will only use less than 10 rounds of ammo for the season from a standard high-powered rifle, and two good kills can probably feed meat for a family of four for 6 months. Excuse me for showing my Jamaican redneck roots. He's right. He's right. No, you know, that redneck czar Kevin's talking about is the same guy that I want walking around. You know, because when Caesar had a triumph, there was a guy walking behind him holding his laurels over his head who every now and then leaned forward and whispered in his ears, "This is all temporary." You know, while the triumph was going on. Well, that's that same guy I want in the cabinet, the Jesus Barack guy. You know, when Axelrod's standing there saying, "Oh, this was a great idea, sir," and the phone rings and it's, oh, you know, his old buddy Rahm Emanuel saying, "Oh, you done good today, sir." You know, you need that one guy standing there whose only job is to look at him and go, "Jesus, Barack, what are you thinking?" Oh, by the way, you're going to love this. We were talking about the Humpty Dome. David in South Carolina says, Metrodome collapse dispels global warming myth. Yes, the right-wing babbleheads say this Metrodome collapse proves that global warming is a hoax. Where's that straw? Where's that bottle? God. Dave in South Carolina also noting, there are Obama supporters on Facebook talking about what an idiot Bernie Sanders and Dennis Kucinich are and how stupid the liberals are, and last week some of them were saying that liberals were KKK for going against this Obama tax deal. Oh, sweet Jesus. Good thing I don't spend more time than I do on the Facebook. But I would prefer that the tar baby scenario win out over the deficit patch scenario. This is scary business across the board. Our buddy Joe Ray, the foxhole atheist, by the way, wrote in. And he said, I had a thought the other day, and then considered that by being a whitey, I probably don't have a right to voice it. I'll let you decide. No, we'll let everybody decide. Listen to this. Write this down. Republicans have been successful at one thing, bringing racial, sexual, and gender equality to America. Sit down, sit down. It's okay. It's okay. Joe hasn't gone over to the other side. I know it sounds strange, he says, but think about this. When Republicans are in charge of the government, we are all black. We are all female. We're all gay. We're all Muslims. And he's right. He's absolutely right. But it's not that anybody's getting lifted up. It's that everybody is getting pressed down. By the way, Michael in Sebastopol said it was Upton Sinclair, the jungle. For the life of me, I can't keep my Sinclair straight. Sinclair Lewis, Upton Sinclair. Can we do something about that? Can we help me? Is there some little mnemonic, you know, like you learn with music, that, you know, every good boy does fine? Whatever, please. Because I am forever screwing that up. Marty asking, could the Supreme Court rule so broadly that even compulsory auto insurance could be unconstitutional? Well, no. The short answer is yes. Those crazy bastards, the rats, can do anything they want to, and they are not constrained by stare decisis. They're not stare decisis. You know, they're not constrained by rule of law, by ethics, by morals. They're not constrained by the Constitution. They're not constrained by religion. They are really, really, they are corporatist anarchists of the legal stripe. So, but the thing is, auto insurance laws are determined on a state-by-state basis. There are states in this country, I think, still that don't require mandatory auto insurance. So that has to be done on a state basis, and since it benefits the insurance industry, you can bet your bottom dollar that nobody will ever speak out against it. At least nobody that matters, i.e., you know, teabaggers, Republicans, and you know, that sort. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Cossack, what's up?
Oh, not much. You're doing fine this evening. As usual.
Well, thank you. It's just, you know, I don't know. I think I thrive in weird.
And Sandra brought her usual incisive, heavy thinking to matters.
Oh, Sandra brings her A game every night.
A couple of points I wanted to hit with you. One, I hate to tell you this, but I've always been a despiser of identity politics. No matter what identity is being stressed, because it usually works out to we love us, we hate them. You know, I had...
The school of thought that says if they said it, therefore it must be wrong.
Right. And, you know, you never know. Sometimes people you least think are likely to be on your side are. Believe it or not. Yeah.
Yeah, but where the teabaggers pissing and moaning about the deficit are concerned, I'm not willing to go there, Kazak.
Oh, no. Not that. I mean, they're divorced from reality. That's the problem. You know, I agree with their anger. I empathize with it. I understand it fully, but they're aiming at the wrong target. They're turning around, shooting back into the audience.
Right, and that Cossack stems from the fact that the teabaggers are not real.
Well,
you know, they are a wholly corrupted creature of K Street.
Well, yeah, I think more of the K Street spawn, like the Koch brothers and.
No, I don't think that the Koch brothers' money doesn't go into K Street.
Absolutely.
Dick Army quote outfit and Carl Rove's Crossroads GPS and, you know, those all live right there on K Street.
Oh yeah, and it's Crossroads, and then separate from them is Crossroads GPS. there to under his thumb directly. And it, you know, it's not just that, but you know, I was so unearthly annoyed by people saying, you know, for example, when Obama got elected, we've got a black man. Excuse me, he's about as black as I am. Actually, I'm probably more black than he is because I grew up in neighborhoods with black people. He didn't. I mean, you know, just because someone is something doesn't necessarily mean that they ascribe to any of the generally perceived patterns for that group. And Obama certainly doesn't know the meaning of fighting like hell to get from here to tomorrow. He's never been exposed to that. And you can tell just by his actions that he doesn't really know what it's like.
Now, you know, Ishmael Reed in that op-ed at the New York Times said that, and I can't remember who it was that ran the Harry Truman clip. I don't know exactly. I saw some reference to it.
Right.
But he was castigating whoever that progressive talker was for running it and saying that that's what Obama needed to do and that he couldn't do it because then he'd be called, you know, an angry black man with hatred for white people, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, Harry Truman, and this is an extension of the point that you make, Cossack. Harry Truman had known being piss poor.
Yeah.
Harry Truman was a haberdasher.
Yeah.
And not a very good one.
Correct.
Harry Truman had heard gas shells whistling over his head as an artillery officer in the First World War, if I recall correctly.
He was a corporal. He was he actually led men in combat.
No, see, I thought he was an officer. Maybe I was wrong.
He was a corporal. He was leading a detachment of men. They were hit with gas shells, and as opposed to many officers, he actually led his men.
And so, you know, I guess the question is. I mean, for instance, last night on the Puff Piece profile of Ball and Boner.
Oh, I wasn't going to waste my time.
Yeah, well, I know. But they did the, you know, he was born in a log cabin. You know, it was this tiny house where 11 members of the 11 Boner children grew up. And it talked about how his family were Kennedy Democrats, but that John turncoated. Once he became fabulously wealthy with a small plastics business and, quote-unquote, saw how much of his hard-earned money was being taken away by taxes.
I will not violate the seven words, but...
Yeah. Me too.
You know, you understand why some of those seven words are used. In common parlance.
Oh, without a doubt. But the thing that struck me was CBS. For as weird as that thing was, you know, they stayed away from things like the actual documented giving away of tobacco company checks on the floor of the house.
Yeah, they have film of that.
Yeah, so CBS stayed away from that.
Yeah, but why don't they show that? I mean, for God's sakes, Bob, that's the equivalent of who was it, Senator Ames, who was handing out credit mobilier checks on the floor of the Senate.
True.
You know.
But in the course of that whole thing, what drives me crazy is the repetition of this crapulastic meme that taxes are bad. You know, the guy got fabulously wealthy in a little plastics company, and he had all that wealth, but it wasn't enough because he was actually paying taxes in the 70s, the 1970s or early 1980s, whatever, late 70s, he actually had to pay taxes for the privilege of making all that godforsaken money?
Yeah. That's what
is there no gratitude left in this country for what this country allows people to do with their lives?
No. And even more importantly, I think, Bob, is we no longer have community in this country, and hence we have no communal shame. And something like this should be the object of shame. And we don't have it anymore. Our politicians certainly don't have it. I mean, when you have family values politicians going out there running their mouths about how to be moral and everything will be all right if we're moral and upstanding and fear God and what have you. And then it turns out, you know, well, they were visiting hookers in D.C. and New Orleans. They were getting their bottoms diapered. Good grief. And you have the chutzpah to run for election? Even worse, you get elected?
Well, but doesn't that all just fall under the general rubric of IOKIYAR? Because there's a million things that if a Democrat had done it, Cossack, the reaction would be swift and sure. For instance, if Nancy Pelosi had done that same puff piece with Leslie Stahl that Ball and Boner did,
yeah,
and she had wept even once, she would have been roundly castigated as a weak woman who was under the thrall of her own emotions.
Correct. But we can't say that about Ball and Boner, who will become lacrimous at the drop of a quarter.
Yeah. Can you imagine a Democratic politician getting caught going to a hooker?
Oh, God. Well,
probably couldn't live in the United States anymore. David Vitter gets reelected for it.
Yeah.
After having one of those really uncomfortable press conferences where he trots out his long-suffering wife and says, well, this is a family matter. We're going to keep it in the family. It's our business, and we appreciate it if you just stay out of our business. God bless America. I'm running for reelection. My name's David Vitter. Did I say God bless America? I did. 9/11.
And, you know, the thing is, look what happened to the New York governor, Spitzer.
Well, there you have it.
I mean, him, they crucified. The FBI violated their charter, violated their rules. You know, we're spying on Spitzer on political orders from Karl Rove. That is virtually 100% established. That goes, and yet, with all that, he does the virtuous and the honorable thing. If we were in Japan, he would have committed seppuku. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas this piece of human refuse, all these things become public record, and yet his God-fearing Bible-something constituency, can you reconcile this for me, Bob? Somehow I'm not making a connection.
No, I can't. That's the problem. Maybe the problem, Cossack, lies in trying to reconcile the unreconcilable. You know, there's that old Zen thing that I learned a million years ago when I was riding my dinosaur to school that said that answering the fundamental problem of most religion is that it attempts to answer questions of the heart with the facilities of the brain, and thereby leads to madness.
Yeah.
Well, isn't this is same?
I would say so.
Oh, by the way, I did get a note. Got a note in from Kathy in Arizona. Hate to say it, brother, I was right. Truman was a captain, an artillery officer.
No problem.
I remember
when he was a corporal. Well, the problem is I actually moved to D.C. while Truman was still president. That gives you an idea of how decrepit I am.
So theoretically, you were at least there when he did that thing that no other president has done since. He came to the end of his term. He put his bags in his car, opened the door for his wife and his daughter, got inside his car, and drove his car away.
I said, bye. As Eisenhower was a bit more ostentatious about it.
Well, that's just a stunning thing for me to think about. But since then, it has become the president has become some sort of royal personage who simply cannot do that.
Exactly.
Then again, on January the 20th, 2009, George had to sneak out of D.C.
You're right. I don't remember it at all. But then again,
he left out of. Well, I remember it well because my ass was left circling Dulles for 40. Well, I was stuck on the tarmac 45 minutes, and then was stuck circling Dulles for 45 more, waiting for Dim Leader to clear the airspace. Yeah.
The decider is going aloft. You must wait.
And my thought was, I was sitting there in the plane, and if you go back to whenever I came back from that trip, I was sitting in the plane and I was just saying, I'll bet you I'm sitting here on the tarmac in Beckley, West Virginia, because that dumb little bastard isn't out of Washington yet.
Yeah.
And so I asked the flight attendant and the crew on the way, I said, did we sit on the tarmac for George? And they all just looked at me and went, yep, how'd you know? And that was just one last little time, and I got to, you rotten little. Yeah.
But, there's another thing I wanted to bring up. You know how tax cuts pay for themselves?
Oh, Jesus.
And
You're really determined tonight, aren't you, Cossack?
Well, that's what they say, right? Tax cuts pay for themselves.
Right.
Right? And also, tax cuts lead to employment. All right. This is the very road we've been following for the past 30 years.
When are they going to pay for themselves?
Exactly. When do they pay for themselves? They're not. They're costing the country revenue.
Well, and see, that's not to come back to that odious piece, but I sat and watched it like a cheap horror movie last night. Leslie Stahl, journalist. Leslie Stahl, millionaire journalist. Well, maybe I just answered the question I'm about to ask, Cossack. Why couldn't, because they talked about the tax cuts for the rich and everything.
Yeah.
And Boner, Ball and Boner, I think he got near crying when she reminded him that President Not Sure had referred to him as a hostage taker.
Well, excuse me, Mr. President, I thought the election was over.
Those were his words. But Leslie Stahl, in the course of all, why couldn't she say, Mr. Boner? The Bush tax cuts didn't create a single job in the 8 years that they were in effect.
Right.
What is there out there, data, empirical data, anything, to suggest that they will create a single job going forward? Why couldn't she ask that question? And again, I referred to her as millionaire journalist Leslie Stahl, and that probably answers it because she gets a nice she gets her tax cut extended.
Yeah.
Somewhere, somehow, Cossack, we've got to come up with a way to deal with the inherent conflicts of interest in the for-profit media.
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, people forget, back in the day, Edward R. Murrow, though paid handsomely, was not paid a prince's ransom every year. And yet he was a thousand times the journalist any of these wet-behind-the-ear stenographers are.
But then again, Cossack, as David in Tennessee reminds me, and Iraqi oil was going to pay for that war, too.
Yeah. Exactly.
But it doesn't, you know, rather than a few little liberal blog sites, you know, some with a shitload of traffic and everything, but not seen by the general public at large, when does it extend past us? And may, and because I know the American people have got to be asking that same question. Or if you ask the American people that question, will they just say, don't matter? Or will they actually scratch their little heads and wonder aloud themselves?
Well, generally, if you can get through their,
la la la, can't hear you.
You know, once you can get past that and metaphorically grab them by the lapels and shake them until you get their divided attention, you know.
Yeah.
And it takes a while. It does take a while. I've managed to do it, but it's like carrying coals to Newcastle.
No, I know. Cossack, it's been a great conversation, my friend. You have a wonderful night.
You too, Bob.
All right.
Take care.
Later now. I just want to make sure that I hit all the blinking lights. I got a piece of audio to run for you that you'll never hear on the for-profit media that you just got to, but let's get this phone call in. Okay, we won't, so I'm going to do that. First of all, a piece of email from our buddy Chris, known as Blue Ape in the chat room. So I just wanted to put in my two cents. I always love Jim and his phone calls and conversation, but I got a note. Can we please stop calling it Obamacare? It's the name that the right wing has given the health care plan, and they're still calling it that. Hell, I hear liberals sometimes calling it that. I hope not me. If you ever do hear me calling it that, call me out. Chris says, we as liberals have to start framing issues with our own words and not the ones that the right wing gives us. God Almighty, that is so true. That is so absolutely true. But again, it's poured into our ears by the for-profit media to the point that it becomes insidious, doesn't it? To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Gene, what's up?
Okay, sorry. I'm going to make this quick because I've got a meatloaf I'm about to cut into. I was thinking about six weeks ago or so, there was an article about basically what created the Reagan Democrats as far as, you know, what split the coalition labor back then and now. And one of the things that the guy said in the article that struck with me is, like, we let African Americans, I'm paraphrasing, we let African Americans finally get into the steel making business just as it was about to go downhill. And what bothers me about this whole thing with Obama is, do you think that we're getting, I hate to do this, I mean, it sucks to contemplate it, but do you think that, you know, the kind of the right wing is like, we're going to go ahead and we're just going to completely ruin the country, so yeah, we'll let you have a black president and let you think you've won. See what I'm saying?
Well, I don't think you're off base at all. I personally will not be convinced that the Republicans wanted the presidency in 2008. Why else do you put up John McCain and Palin?
Yeah,
they didn't want it.
But my point is that not just that. I mean, I'm sorry, but really, when you think about it, the heart of progressivism or liberalism, as I can tell, or one of its major hearts, is the idea of racial equality.
Yes.
Okay? And so people are going to look at this, and they're going to say, well, geez, when we had a black president, look what happened.
Well, okay. Let me take it a step further then, Gene.
Okay.
Whether he wins re-election in 2012 or not,
mm-hmm.
I am willing to say that it will be at least 100 years, if not 500 years, before we have another person of color in the White House. It'll be at least 100 years.
Well, that's assuming that there'll be a White House to go into.
Yeah, well, that's inherent in my assumption.
Yeah, but see, that's this is what really kills me, because like, it bugs me, because on the one hand, you know, you can expect the rank and file to feel that way. Just that, the rank and file get mad. But I mean, even, I don't know, I would think that if you were a affirmative action advocate or a racial equality advocate right now, you must be thinking, well, I worked hard for all this and wanted to get, you know, I wanted fairness, and what have I got? I don't mean to be offensive. I really don't.
No, I know. I know that.
But that's kind of what I was thinking. So it bugs me, because it's like we said they wanted or they play to win. They really play to win. I mean, they're attacking the ideology. Progressive ideology, you know,
why do you think I mentioned that constitutional provision that allows members of the House and Senate to throw out its own members on a two-thirds vote?
I agree, but I mean, even that you can argue is politics. I mean, this is makes me nuts. I mean, it's like, gee, I don't know. Maybe you've already covered all this and everything, and it all goes without saying, and I'm stating the obvious. But ever since I read that article, it's been bugging the hell out of me, because it goes back to that the Century itself, that video about how they talk about that cousin of Freud or whatever that did the propaganda, and how they use our language. It goes back to the framing pit again. I mean, it's funny, because we describe it in their words, but weren't they once our words too? You know, they kind of appropriated our progressive. They've appropriated the progressive meme, for lack of a better term.
They will steal anything, Gene.
I know they will.
They're cut purses, foot pads, and night stalkers.
Yeah, but the thing that gets me is, like, I guess what irritates me is we're creative enough to go around and create a new thing. And get around this. But eventually they'll come back and they'll steal that too. And it's like, I guess I'm feeling like I get tired of having to reinvent the wheel just to keep them from stealing it. And even though I know in their inherent nature, they are thieves and cutthroats and foot pads and all the rest of the jazz. And it's like, sorry, I don't mean to be offensive. I'm just thinking. Anyway, got one more quick question for you, and I'll let you go. And it's a complete non-political question. I tried to cook red kidney beans the other night, and they took forever, and they didn't get done. Got another bean that would cook a little bit faster that I could try.
Did you soak them?
Yes, overnight.
Okay, the first thing you can do is you can always go with the hot water soak.
Hot water.
Yeah, you get sufficient, you know, you rinse and you sort and you get all the lint and dust bunnies out of your beans.
Okay.
Because, you know, they're a natural product and they do have grit and dirt and stuff in them, so you got to rinse them real good. And you put them in your pot, you boil a whole bunch of water, and you pour the boiling water over the beans, you cover the beans, and you let them sit for an hour. Then you then you start the cooking process. If you've got a crock pot, that's the easiest thing, really.
I tried the crock pot, and it didn't work, so. But I might try the other. Anyway, I will let you go. But anyway, there's my 2 cents.
But as far, well, let me extend just 1 second. As far as a better bean, where you are, you know, there in Oregon, do you have any of those little Mexican groceries that spring up wherever there's a Latino community?
We had one, but it went belly up, and I probably could find one. You thinking of Pintos?
No. I'm thinking of Mayacobas.
Well, I'll look about it. I'll look around and see if I can.
Yeah, Mayacoba, Gene. The most amazing bean in the world.
Okay, I'll try.
Cultivated by the peoples of the Valley of Mexico for about 5,000 years. It puts a pinto to shame. Other than that, my favorite bean is not a pinto. Outside of Mayacoba, my favorite bean is around here we call them October beans, but in the grocery store you'll see them sold as October beans.
Okay. All right.
I mean cranberry beans. Cranberry beans.
Okay, cranberries. All right.
All right. You take care, Gene.
Thanks, Bob.
Bye now. Oh, good. We worked in a little bit of food porn on a Monday evening. Cranberry or October beans really are much meatier than a pinto, by the way. Just saying. To go back, because there's only about 20 minutes remaining in the program. Again, I follow the tweets of Roger Ebert. And I got this via one of his tweets the other day. And it's a beautiful thing. I don't know if this is for real or not. But I do. It certainly does. It certainly sounds for real. The guy asking the questions may have been a comedian. I think he is a comedian. But the real live honest to God Irishman at least sounds like a real live honest to God Irishman. And he's talking about things in a way that with the economy in Ireland and what's being done to the Irish that you almost wish you could hear here. You almost wish that the left or progressives or liberals or whatever it is that we are, I think we've been defined almost right out of existence between, 20 years of Rush Limbaugh the lambasting us and Glenn Beck calling for us to be killed and the Obama administration suggesting that we're retards who need to be subjected to drug testing. I don't know what we are anymore. I just know that I am not a right-winger. I know that I want everybody who gets sick to be able to go to the doctor without being crushed by debt or subjected to some form of draconian creature of hell means testing. I want clean elections. I'd like to get out of Afghanistan. There's some Afghanistan stuff out there as well that just mind-boggling. And yeah, as I sort of make plain from time to time, I get pissed off, like this guy.
I'm Jason Calabrese with the Financial News, and today we're talking to a real Irishman and someone in the money business about what's going on in Ireland with the Celtic Tiger and the banks are hurting so much, the downfall. What's the story here?
Do you really want to know?
I'd love to know.
Well, I tell you, it's like what has happened all over the Western world for the last 20 or 30 years. Greed and more fucking greed and cheap money. And in Ireland, it's a tragedy what happened to the Tiger. We have I'd say four causes. We had a stupid fucking government. We had a regulator that was asleep at the wheel. We had very deceitful and conniving and corrupt developers. And, of course, above all, wanking fucking bankers. Wanking bankers. We had these arseholes that for the last 20, 30 years are getting these massive bonuses, these employees and directors of banks, on the misfortune of the working class and getting these huge bonuses and salaries. But you know, if you and all these arseholes should be thrown in jail and the keys thrown away for the rest of their life. And you know, sir, if you went in and you're unemployed and you wanted to take a loaf of bread out of a store or a supermarket to feed your family, guess what? You'll be up in court for it. These assholes are living all over the world now on the backs of the misfortunate working people. And who's going to pay for all this? We've mortgaged the next generation or two. Who's going to pay for it? The working men. We got the labourer, the small farmer, the fisherman, the nurse, the teacher, the policeman, the fireman, the plumber, the carpenter. Fuck sake, man. This is a joke.
So I'm sensing a wee bit of discontent?
You are indeed, sir. And by the way, let's not be too cocky in this part of the world, North America either. All these debts that people have accumulated over the last 30 years. Hey, everybody gets their day in the sunshine.
And you know, speaking of the Celtic Tiger and all that you mentioned, you know that Michael Flatley is really from Chicago. But that's another story.
Fuck off!
It was the Michael Flatley thing that let me onto the fact that the journalist part of it was at least a put up. But you know, there's a lot of F words and a lot of a holes, but there's a lot of sir. You know, there's sir in there as well. The lovely little character note, isn't it? But you know, thank God we've got the FCC, who has its hand on the morality button of the United States, so that a guy who actually talks like that can never be allowed on the public airwaves. Because I don't know about you, but I'm not offended by that. I don't find those words obscene when they're used in that context. I'm just not. By the way, breaking news coming in from Mora. Republican National Committee Chairman Michael Steele is actually going to run for re-election. That wasn't expected, but he's gonna. Whew, that's some brass. I guess he kind of has to keep the next guy from looking at the books and winding up turning it over to a grand jury or something. Remember the strip joints? Yeah, me too. And secondly, Special Representative to Afghanistan and Pakistan, veteran diplomat Richard Holbrooke, has passed away at 69. It was my understanding it was an aortic aneurysm, and those you don't get well from those. Those are the things you just kind of have to ultrasound for periodically and hope for the best. Those things are brutal. Speaking of Afghanistan, a couple of stories that I caught early in the day that just sort of stopped me in my tracks. It is not going well over there, to say the least. Two new national intelligence estimates are out, or not out, but they will be released soon. And the upshot of them is that the war in Afghanistan cannot be won unless Pakistan roots out its militants on its side of the border. That's what these two national intelligence estimates say. I think you could come up with a better picture of the military situation in Afghanistan if you just cut out a few words of that sentence I just read. Remember, the war in Afghanistan cannot be won unless Pakistan roots out militants on its side of the border. No. The sentence is much more true if you simply say, the war in Afghanistan cannot be won. And you say this because the great weight of history is behind that statement. Not any hopeful over the rainbow Tinkerbellism, but just reality. I mean, among other things, there are profound problems with Afghan President Hamid Karzai, who I guess is feeling his oats a little bit and feeling a little bit froggy and not noting the fact that the former deal maker for UNICAL before he became president of Afghanistan, he's kind of forgotten that his head is riding lightly vis-a-vis its attachment to his neck and the rest of him thereby. Washington Post reporting today, Afghan President Hamid Karzai had heard enough. For more than an hour, General David Petraeus, U.S. Ambassador Carl Eikenberry, and other top Western officials in Kabul urged Karzai to delay implementing a ban on private security firms. You know, the Blackwater types. Because they have run riot through Afghanistan, and enough pressure has been brought to bear on Karzai that he is sick of it. Reconstruction projects worth billions of dollars would have to be shuttered, they maintained, if foreign guards were evicted. In other words, if you get uppity, Hamid, and throw out the Blackwater boys, we're going to shut down all the little projects that were making you look like you were somebody and something. It's called blackmail. But here's the part that gets good. Sitting at the head of a glass-topped U-shaped table in his conference room, Karzai refused to budge, according to two people with direct knowledge of the late October meeting. He insisted that Afghan police and soldiers could protect the reconstruction workers, and he dismissed pleas for a delay. As he spoke, he grew agitated, then enraged. He told them that he now has three main enemies, the Taliban, the United States, and the international community. And here's the quote. This is the pull quote. This is the walk away. If I had to choose sides today, I'd choose the Taliban. After a few more parting shots, he got up and walked out of the wood-paneled room. And yet there are people, satraps, I suppose, or exalted panjandrums inside the diplomatic bureaucracy and the Pentagon bureaucracy in Washington, who are just sure, by God, they're just sure that one of these days we'll get it right. And we really, really will, honest to God, Tinkerbell, we really, really will win the war in Afghanistan. Except for the realism of the facts on the ground, the war in Afghanistan cannot be won unless Pakistan roots out militants on its side of the border. And here's a hint. Pakistan is not going to root out the militants on its side of the border because they are being funded, trained, covered for, protected by the Pakistani Secret Service, the military police, the ISI. Jeebus! Robert in Australia loved the Irishman quote. Funniest thing I've heard in ages, he says, and you could play that on television here in Australia with a pre-show language advisory. Maybe not on radio, not sure about current radio standards, but on TV, no problem. Well, that's because Australia is, at this point, at least a little more socially healthy than the United States is. But out there, if you go to Joe Bajant's website, joebajant.com, J-O-E-B-A-G-E-A-N-T.com, you can see an interview that Joe did with the ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, and wherein he talks at length about his new book that's out over there called Rainbow Pie, that I don't believe has been released in the U.S. yet, as Shanghai Road, and just talks about how the working underclass came to be the working underclass, and talks about the fact that Australia is in a healthier position, but it gets dangerously more American every day, to no good end. To no good end. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, hi, Bob. And what you were talking about there, when you mentioned the ISI, which is Pakistani equivalent of the CIA, it was created by the CIA. And
funny how they make these monsters that turn on them. You'd think that reading Frankenstein would do something good for you.
Did you ever, by chance, read or listen to the interview Sybil Edmonds did with Brad Friedman back spring, June, July 2009, when he is hosting for Malloy?
I believe I did. Well, I think I probably heard it live.
Okay. The cute thing was, when I heard that, I shorthanded it this way, that what she was saying was the CIA, or alphabet soup, DIA, CIA, FBI, whoever you want to call them, the alphabet soup of U.S. intelligence agencies, was running Al-Qaeda the morning of September 11th, 2001. And then essentially when the first plane hit the Trade Center, you know, it was kind of like, surprise! You know, that they were doing their own thing while we thought we were running them, because we wanted to use them.
Well, remember when we were sort of surprised when Pakistan exploded its first nuke?
Oh yeah, right after India did, wasn't it? India exploded one, Pakistan exploded two, then India exploded three. I mean, they seem to want to blow up all the bombs that they had in their inventory just to show that they had more than the other side.
You know what? I can't fault them for that, but because you know, they, remember they had I can't remember the Pakistani's name, the guy that ran the nuclear Walmart that helped North Korea. You know, they you know, shoot all you want, they'll make more.
Well, you could call Valerie Plame and get that, but then again, Scooter Libby happened to out her from doing that unimportant work, such as following around who was doing what with nuclear arms and nuclear materials. But now, you were usually using Moran Monday, I just kind of wondered if you'd run into a guy named Justin Phillips, Tea Party Nation president.
Oh, Judson Phillips, yes.
Yeah, and a few weeks ago he'd come out and he said that you should really be a property owner to be able to vote.
Yeah, I noticed that. Also called for Caribou Barbie to be the head of the RNC.
Well, it hit me that being the Tea Party Nation president and calling for you to be a property owner to vote, given the basic tenet of the Tea Party, which was no taxation without representation, what the guy is saying is only property owners should be taxed.
Now, I'm sure he'd find a way around it, but the other irony coming out of that is the fact that Judson Phillips is a hotshot trial lawyer from the Nashville, Tennessee area. So, you know, there you go with another Southerner arguing about who should and shouldn't be able to be allowed to vote. Some things don't change.
Yeah, true. Well, have a good rest of the evening, and thanks for taking my call.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for making it. We'll talk soon, I hope.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. And that pretty much brings us to the end of Moran Monday. I've got one more Moran, but it'll wait till tomorrow because it deserves more time than I have to devote to it at this point. Thank you to all of you who contribute to keep the program going. Thank you to those of you who matched the Beat the Swede challenge that allowed me to spend the last weekend up to my elbows in computer hardware. You know, I really don't mind doing it. It's just, you know, tedious and time consuming, and the payoff was more than worth it, because we've got redundancy back in our system, which means that one computer going to crap shouldn't take us out for days on end, which is a bonus. And thanks to all of you who also generously contribute to keep things going, because it has been it's been an ugly December. We got a couple of contributions in, and thank you very much for them. We're getting here on the 13th of December almost to the point of having met the first week's goal. You know, any given week, if you break out the $2,500 a month that we try to raise per month to help pay for the White Rose streaming services, as well as the other day-to-day's bills of running the horn. Let's see, $2,500 divided by four. That's $625 a week. We've gotten to $500. So it's a little, we're running a little behind schedule, but thank you for those of you who do contribute. Thank you very much. The PayPal button is ahead on radionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. There's also a snail mail address there where you can contribute that way as well. Indeed, thank you very, very much. Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, our chat room moderator, our two news ninjas, both of whom you heard from this evening, Gene and Susan, both of them out in Oregon, though in separate locations. Our blogger is Texas Betsy. Our Southeast correspondent is Matt Osborne at osborneinc.com. Our op-ed columnist is Reverbo at headonradionetwork.com. Cavalcade of crazy. My head writer is David in Tennessee. All of this does happen because of the ongoing work since 2002 of Ben Birch at whiterosesociety.org. One can never, it's impossible to overestimate the importance that Ben has made, not just to the horn, but to liberal talk in general. He literally saved it. I don't think there would be liberal talk on the internet now if it were not for what Ben Birch has done over the years. John Fox is our chief engineer, also our webmaster and web designer, a fine talk show host in his own right, stunning musician, great producer, and one of these days we'll get him back behind the microphone as soon as his schedule gets normaler. The program also comes to you by virtue of the continued dedicated support of the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and coalriverwind.org. If you haven't been to the websites in a while, why don't you go and have a look? Give them a little traffic. You could even join. It's not costly at all. CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.